Thank you. జాయం విష్ణుభారణ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్యోగిరి ఓం నమో భాగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
ఓం నమో
భాగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
ఓం నమో భాగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
ఓం నమో భాగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
ఓం నమో భాగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసాం సౌజాయ మోదీరాయ హస్తాప్రాయే శోభాద్రేషు నిత్యం భగవన్ హస్తేయ భాగవతి రామశ్లోకే భక్తి భగవతి నైస్తికి. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and purports by Sivan Grace, A.C. Bhagavatam, Swami Sri Bhagavatam, 16th chapter, 22nd verse. Shriyati
Shriyati
ఉపాచ
ఉపస్థాయి
Srimati Aditi began to pray.
Srimati Aditi began to pray.
Kena.
Kena.
By which?
By which?
Aham.
Aham.
Aye.
Aye.
Vidina.
Vidina.
By regulated principles.
By regulated principles.
Brahman.
Brahman.
Upasthasye.
Upasthasye.
Can please.
Can please.
Jagatpatim.
Jagatpatim.
Lord of the universe.
Lord of the universe.
Jagannath.
Yata,
yata, by which?
By which?
May,
my.
Such a sankalpa,
such a sankalpa,
desire may be actually be fulfilled. Desire may actually be fulfilled. Vidatyat,
vidatyat,
may fulfill.
May fulfill.
Saha,
saha,
he the Supreme Lord.
He the Supreme Lord.
Manoratam,
manoratam,
ambitions or desire.
Ambitions or desires.
It is said, I should have brought it up. Translation first. This is Prabhupada's translation, then we can repeat it. Srimati Aditi said, O Brahman, tell me the regulated principles by which I may worship the Supreme Master of the world, so that the Lord will be pleased with me and fulfill all my desires responsibly. Srimati Aditi said,
Srimati Aditi said,
O Brahman,
O Brahman,
tell me the regulated principles.
Tell me the regulated principles
by which I may worship.
By which I may worship
the Supreme Master of the world.
The Supreme Master of the world.
So that the Lord will be pleased.
So that the Lord will be pleased
with me and fulfill all my desires.
With me and fulfill all my desires.
Good part. I should have followed that. It is said, man proposes, God disposes. Thus a person may desire many things. But unless these desires are fulfilled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they cannot be fulfilled. Fulfillment of desire is called satya-sankalpa. Here the word satya-sankalpa is very important. Aditi placed herself at the mercy of her husband so that he would give her directions by which to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead so that all her desires would be fulfilled. A disciple must first decide that he should worship the Supreme Lord, and then the spiritual master will give the disciple correct directions. One cannot dictate to the spiritual master, just as the patient cannot demand that his physician prescribe a certain type of medicine. Here is the beginning of worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.16, Chapter Vrtavajante Mam, Janaksukritinarjuna Arto Jigyasa Artharti, Gyanichavara Harshava. O best among Bhartas, four kinds of pious men to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for absolute knowledge of the Absolute. Aditi was Artha, a person in distress. She was very much aggrieved because her sons, demigods, were bereft of everything. Thus she wanted to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead under the direction of her husband, Kashyapa Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Svapitam Jena Bhikare Vayamipakaramayam Bharati Svapram Bhikam. There are many types of vratas or vows, such as we were fasting yesterday. They are very small, or very minor, or very insignificant in the sense that they're not very difficult to perform. And the vrata that is mentioned specifically for this particular age is the Sankirtan Yajna. Krishna Bharam Kisha Krishna Sambhavanda Sukhasana Krishna. One should engage in the chanting of the name. There are many other types of sacrifices, many other types of vows. Some people follow the vow of fasting every day or every week. Some people follow the vows of not eating grains regularly. Some people follow the vows of various types of austerities. There's the vows of full moon. There's vows of celibacy. There's many types of vows that we can follow, and many types of vows that we do follow. But of all those types of regulations and vows, one most important is called the Sankirtan Yajna. So that is actually described as a yajna, or a vow. And when we take initiation, we subscribe to that particular vow, we chant a certain number of rounds a day, we follow certain regulations. And these are very difficult, but also very easy vows to follow, because in the age of Kali, we're given special dispensations. In the age of Kali, one has to actually commit a simple activity. Just thinking about that simple activity in previous yugas was considered to be simple, and one would have to pay reactions for those thoughts. But in Kali Yuga, just thoughts are not sufficient. One has to actually engage in simple activity directly, personally, physically, in order to actually count as a simple activity. So in Kali Yuga, we're given special dispensation that we don't have to follow these vows. Like Chaturmasa is another vow that many devotees follow, and the prescription for following that vow is also given in the Chaitanya Chaitanya. If one wants to follow that vow, one follows certain vows and partake of certain foodstuffs during those particular months. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati followed that vow very strictly. He was very strict during that time. Sometimes men grow beards during that period, they don't shave. And as the story goes, as Srila Prabhupada told us, that he was exhibiting great austerity. He would mix rice and dal and put it on the floor and put his hands behind his back and just lift it up off the floor. So it's not an easy vow to follow, Chapter Mas, and there's many different types of austerities that one can engage in, many types of vows that one undergoes in practicing Krishna consciousness. In prior ages, people were able to meditate in such a yuga, 70,000 years. Also, yogis sometimes would sit around fires all wrapped in blankets during the summer heat, or they would stand in ice water up to their necks during the winter, and in various ways practice different vows of austerity. And you'll see people sometimes now in the town doing all kinds of very, we would call them tamasic austerities, as opposed to staring at the sun, standing on one leg, keeping one arm raised for the whole lifetime. So these are different types of austerities. There are austerities in the different modes, the most vigorous and the most passionate. But the austerity that is recommended this age is Krishna Varnatisha Krishna Sambhavam with the Parshadam. Yajna Sankirtana Praya. It is the Sankirtana. Yajna, it is a form of yoga, actually. And in prior ages, the different types were prescribed, temple worship, meditation, great austerities. But in this age, the age of Kali, we're given a very special facility that we can just chant Hare Krishna mantra and get the benefit of all the great austerities of the past, very elaborate sacrifices, temple worship, and meditation that was possible to do only in prior ages, a very long time. So the same benefits accrue to one who is practicing Sankirtan Yoga. The Sankirtan Yoga just means chanting the holy name. It sounds very simple, very simplistic, but it's actually very difficult to get a taste for the holy name, because actually, in one sense, there's nothing else that we have to do in this age of Kali, to chant the holy name of the Lord. And then by doing that, our senses are purified, our mentality is completely purified, all the marks are eradicated from the heart, and we get ruchiya, what is called taste. It begins with the eightfold process that we read about, shraddha, progresses to sadhusanga, then progresses to vajna kriya, and gradually we become free from our offenses, we become steady nishtha, we develop taste ruchi, and then we attain prema and bhava. Those are the last two stages. But to develop this ruchi or taste, it's not so easy. There are different types of ruchi described by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. This Madhurya Kadambini. One is the type of ruchi that exists when all the elements of excellence are in place, or all the elements are in what they call excellence. So in other words, when one is attached to kirtan, only to this very song very beautifully, or beautiful instruments, or if one is attached to a deity, only the worship is very gorgeous in a very beautiful temple. Or if the Sankirtan Yoga is performed in a very choreographed, very beautiful way, one becomes attached to those things, and if those elements of excellence are not there, the sense of ruchi, or the taste for Krishna consciousness,
taste for this type of yogi, or sankirtan, is not so great. It's conditional, in other words. But if without those elements being in excellent position, if one has a real taste for Krishna consciousness, a painting, it may not be very beautiful, but it's painted with devotion. A song may not be sung by someone who's a very excellent singer, but some great devotion gives depth of feeling. Yes, worship to deity is done very wholeheartedly, and gifts are, and worship is performed, gifts are given to deity from the heart. They may not be millions of dollars or very popular, but they're from the heart. Krishna stuff is from most times. And the Dhamma Buddhi Yoga. If they're done with Kariji Purukam, loving ecstasy, then Krishna becomes very happy. He becomes very pleased because he's not looking for the excellence of element. He's not looking for the quantity. He's looking for the quality. Quality of our devotion. And this is what makes for pleasing Krishna. So without the excellence element, that type of ruchi is considered to be on a higher level. And it's not conditioned, by the way. There's a story, an actual incident, where a devotee who was a very good writer presented a drawing to Prabhupada, Bhakti Vedanta, in 1976. And he wanted to know if he should pursue this writing, painting business, because like he enjoyed it and he made a painting. It was a pretty good painting. But Prabhupada also knew that he was very talented in terms of his writing and editing. And he looked at the picture and he said, it's a good. But he said, this isn't the art of service. Your service is writing. This is what you should do. And not long after that, he was on an airplane flying from London to India. And he had a very primitive kind of drawing. It was a finger painting of a child, about 5 or 6. And it was a painting of Krishna playing the flute. And it was a very simple kind of childlike painting. It wasn't the kind of thing you'd consider very beautiful. It looked like a kid's painting. But Prabhupada stuck that painting on a seat in front of him and meditated on that all the way from London to India, 8-hour flight or so. And he chanted that picture because that picture was done with the kind of innocence and devotion that children sometimes have. But he was very attached to Krishna and really painted that painting with great devotion. So Prabhupada was more attached to that painting in which the elements of excellence were not present than he was to the one of the devotee who was maybe a better painter, but wasn't doing it with the same level of devotion and had the same feeling as he had in his writing, which was very, very devoted. So this is an example of taste. And taste is something that develops gradually. First, as I say, there has to be some simple faith, there has to be some association, some worship, some desire to rid oneself of the dharmas, some steadiness to show that once rid of these dharmas, one does not succumb to those dharmas again, becomes tempted to go back to whatever in the material world is very tempting. And then, when one becomes steady, one attains state of ruchi, which means that we like to chant. It's not that we have to force ourselves. I remember when I was first starting to chant, it was so difficult to get up early in the morning before the sun rose, and it was dark, and I was sleepy. I was trying to stay on my feet. It was very hard even to stay on my feet because I just wanted to go to sleep all the time. I was kind of bumping into the walls, trying to chant 16 rounds. Very, very difficult. No taste. There was no taste. It was just obligatory. And of course, obligatory-ness is very essential. And that comes actually before our taste. That we have the faith, and we have we hear, we develop the faith, we associate with the belief. And then we want to, we have the basic day shot, that's the beginning. And then we want to take the vows. We want to do that. We want to free ourselves of dharma. So we approach and we think, okay, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life and chant. It's maybe going to be difficult, but I'm going to do it anyway. So that's the beginning. And Prabhupada is very fond of quoting, obedience is the first law of discipline, or discipline is the first law of obedience. I think it's obedience is the first law of discipline. He's trying to find it. The aphorism in English somewhere, someone said it. So obedience, loyalty, faithfulness are very, very important because they're the precursors of love. We talk about love, love of God, love of the spiritual master. But the first requirements to attain those things are we have to obey. We have to want to do these austerities. But then when we take the vow, we want to obey. Because that is the symbol. That's the symbol of really developing that love. It's the first law of love. So we have to see what is wanted, we have to make that commitment and follow that commitment for ideally the rest of our life. So that's very important. And that then one develops a taste, because at first it's very difficult, it's just being done by, I've got to do it, it's a duty, and then gradually it develops into taste, it becomes a taste. And so you can close your eyes and chant and be very fulfilled. It's not that you have to, you know, have a spiritual atmosphere. And of course, it helps. It helps us all. We'll be in the temple, we'll be around the devotees, and to smell the incense and flowers, to be in the presence of the deities. And for all of us, really, that's a great help. It helps us. But when one comes to the stage of Ruchi, that chanting is so wonderful, especially in the higher stages of devotion, when one comes to the Bhakti, which is Madhukari, the Hamsa devotees, they relish that taste. So Guru Swami has given us a very nice verse that I wish I had thousands of tongues and ears. Because by thousands of tongues, I could better relish the taste of the Hare Krishna mantra. I could really taste the beauty of it. If I had thousands of ears, I could really appreciate the sound. I could actually really understand how beautiful the sound of Krishna mantra is. Because when the holy name appears in my tongue, all my senses become alert and I become struck. So these symptoms of transcendental ecstasy, of happiness, sometimes tears, sometimes pain, sometimes faltering of the voice, we can't imitate. Sometimes people do that. But in the mind and the heart of the pure devotee, that taste of Ruchi is so strong. It's not just a vow, it's not just a rasa, it's a taste. So this is what devotees aspire for. They aspire not to just do the rounds to get them done. It's the duty, of course, we have to do it. And that's what keeps us going, keeps us safe, but to actually develop a sense that this is the thing that I aspire for. There's nothing better, there's no higher feeling, no greater taste. I was with Prabhupada alone in 1967, and he was very ill. He had to come back. We'd been for a walk on the beach. It was in the summer, it was in August. And that year, 1968, he had a stroke and he was very ill. And I sat with him in his conservatory room, kind of a den off to the side of this beach house in Paradiso, Vincent Beach in California, where Prabhupada was until he recuperated. So we went for this walk, and then he asked me, he said, "What is your concept of Krishna?" And I was really taken aback by that. Well, I was really testing me. You know, I'm not intellectual. What am I going to say? So I said, "Well, Krishna's God. He's a supreme being, and I have to love him and carry out his service." So kind of, okay, that's all right. Not really great. And then he said, he looked at me very sternly and said, "So you have to chant 64 rounds every day." And I was kind of, "God, what is he saying? How can I chant 64 rounds a day? I can't even chant 16 a day." And I was completely like unable to answer because I thought, well, this is it. You know, I was trying to figure out how am I going to chant 64 rounds a day. It would be a radical change in lifestyle. It would be like 6, 7, 8 hours a day, nothing else, just chanting. I'd have to figure out a place to go and how to, you know, relinquish all my other activities. So I just was kind of stuck and trying to figure it all out. And he was kind of staring at me. And then he said, "Then you must chant 32 rounds every day." And then the same thing, I was starting to think, gosh, I'm going to double in. I can't do that. It's like 4 hours a day. I don't know, but I'll have to somehow, Prabhupada says, do it. This is going to be a new standard. I was thinking that he was going to set this up for the whole society. Everyone would have to chant 32 rounds a day. It was a new thing because we had taken vows to chant 16 rounds a day. Now it's all going to be ratcheted up, be more nauseous, and we're going to have to chant. So I just stared at him. I didn't know what to say. I was just kind of, you know, thinking how I was going to do it. And then, without sort of, you know, changing his expression, he said, "Then you must chant 16 rounds a day." And I immediately said, "Oh, yes, Prabhupada." Because I knew that I could probably handle that, although I didn't have taste for it, but I was doing it. So I thought, okay, I'm going to chant 16 rounds. Anyway, it was kind of like a test. To see, I think, as I look back, you know, hindsight 2020, that he was kind of really testing me to see if I really liked to chant. Because at that time, it was like really a duty. And of course, it still is very much a duty, but the idea was, you know, if you really enjoy chanting, you're not going to object to chanting 4 times as many rounds. You're going to love to chant, and you're just going to say yes immediately. But I didn't say that. So it's kind of like he was testing the water. You know? I think he kind of knew that nobody was going to want to chant more than 16 rounds a day, which is very hard. And then in some of his lectures later on, I read that he said that we have to do service because we're not so pure that we can appreciate chanting. It's not easy to do. And we're not going to spontaneously be attracted. But we have to push on the Krishna consciousness movement. So we have so many activities to do during the day. And that became the kind of rationale, justification. In one sense, we knew that there was nothing really else to do. There's nothing more important than chanting. That in the spiritual world, you don't really care about anything else. And pureness and pure devotion service, there's nothing greater than chanting. There's nothing, there's no other jagat, there's nothing more
more pleasing, nothing more pleasurable, nothing more that's wanted. But in our conditioned state of life, and we're not good Madhikaris, we're at best Majjha Madhikaris, we're trying to develop some love for God. We're trying to develop some love for chanting, for Krishna in His name. It's not different from His name. But we have to do all these things, Prabhupada, because the movement requires a lot of energy. It has to be pushed on. So many people have to be convinced about Krishna consciousness. They have to be allured. Somehow they have to be induced to take prasada, to come to the temple, to whatever. You know, they have to meet devotees. They have to have hospitality with devotional service. They need to see the books. They need to find out the philosophy. So in whatever way they're attracted, whether it's intellectually, whether it's emotionally or musically, or by their tongue, or just by the association of nice devotees, by the atmosphere of the temple, by the beauty of the deities, they have to be attracted. So it requires great energy. We were talking last night about how if we just only try to become pure devotees and chant nicely, follow our vows, chant 16 rounds and follow the principles, and you know, worship the deity, we have faith that the deity is there, we have faith in the Krishna conscious movement, we speak about Krishna, we preach, we go out and read the books, and we talk to people in our homes, we're worshiping the temple, we're trying to think about Krishna. Then, is everything going to be all right? That was the question. It's that simple, Krishna consciousness, that we don't have to worry about anything else. Is everything going to be all right? And everything is going to expand, and millions of people are going to become devotees. The whole world is going to be missionized by Hare Krishna. And, you know, there's nothing else. So that question was asked by Giriraj Maharaj Prabhupada, and it was his last meeting with him. I confirmed this with him, because I wanted to be sure it was really the case. It wasn't just a story. And he said that, yeah, Prabhupada, I confirmed that, yeah, if you just you're pure, and you follow the principles, you follow your vows, and you do everything you're supposed to do, and you preach, then, yeah, everything will be all right. But then Prabhupada added something, as after he said, yes, he said that you have to use your organization and your intelligence. So that was the last thing he heard Prabhupada say. You do have to follow everything. You can't follow the philosophy. You have to follow this enough. But at the same time, you have to use your intelligence. And you have to use your organization. So, the meditation is not so much on what Prabhupada might have said at one time, but he said many things, and that it was for all time and all place, but what would Prabhupada do? What if he were here now? And so it becomes a kind of Deshakalapatra meditation, of, you know, we're meditating on, but what Prabhupada would do if he were here now? What would he say should be done? In various circumstances, we have so many circumstances, but that's kind of like meditation. So the simple vows, they're very important. And as we're reading here, you might have material desires. Like you might have some desires that aren't even necessarily pure. But if we engage in devotional service, Tivena Bhakti Yogena, that is very important. Bhakti is so powerful that even though we might have some material motivations in our Krishna consciousness, which many people have, it's mentioned here, chapter Vijayajante, Namjan, Sukhajanajana, Artojigyasa, Artojigyananas, Bhadharshava. But there are four types of people that come to Krishna. And one of the people is looking for better, for material wealth. And that's, you know, we might consider that as contamination, because that's not pure devotional service. And it's written that we shouldn't be gyanis, we shouldn't be yogis, we shouldn't be gyanis, we should engage in pure devotional service. But even if we're contaminated, even if we have some material desire, some ulterior motive, if we follow the vow, like Aditya is doing here, we follow the vow of Sankirtan, we will become purified. If we want to become purified, that is, if we're just trying to become pure devotees and trying to become good devotees and trying to develop a taste instead of just getting wealthy or just being alleviated from misery or just becoming philosophers. We really want to be pure devotees. We really want to go before Krishna at the end of our life and say, this is what I did. Yadidam paramanguyam. Madhavakeshaya Dashasim Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. But if you do, if you spread this Krishna consciousness, that's the most pleasing. There's no more pleasing soul. So we can go before Krishna with that. In other words, if we have that kind of idea, then we can be easily completely purified. Or if, like Aditi, she's following very strictly, following the vows that are going to lead her to purity. Or like Dhruva, you know, he's the example of one who came to Krishna with material desire, Dhruva Maharaj, going to the kingdom. But when he saw Krishna, he was so happy that he said, it's in the Dhruva Bhakti, he lost his name. Yeah, sometimes the song is word. That I was looking for broken pieces of glass and I found the greatest gem in the world, in Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is famous for this. So when we actually come face to face with Krishna, who is the reservoir of everything, Aishvaryasya, some of us, yeah, he's the supreme object. He's the supreme Viryasya. He's the supreme Yashasha, Shriya, most beautiful, most powerful, most influential. Gyanavairagya Yaschaiva, he's the most renounced. He's the most knowledgeable. When we come to contact with such a person like that, there's nothing else that we want, that we can really want for ourselves. So that definition of Vishnu Purana, of God, very important. Vasharamuni gave that definition. We actually come into contact with the Supreme Being. Then whatever vows, whatever obedience we're following, whatever vows we're following, they begin to melt into insignificance because we realize that there's nothing greater than the person Krishna, there's nothing greater than the name of Krishna. Kali Kali, Namarupa Krishna Avatar, Krishna's name. So that taste is there. The taste is there because Krishna's all opulent, all beautiful, all influential, all attractive, all renounced, all knowledgeable. And when we chant the name of Krishna, we'll gradually, those of us who are here are sincere, trying to develop that taste, trying to become pure devotees, we'll develop that sense of Uchi, and then all our anarthas, our anarthas, they will disappear. They will dissipate and become non-existent. And we will gradually not only become pure devotees, but we will make so many other pure devotees in our preaching programs, because we will be trying to please God and not ourselves, and not compromise the philosophy. So I got a little later when I used to give classes, so we're returning on Thursday or Friday, and we have small classes and questions and answers. Thank you very much. Srila Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.